This evening I'm going to talk to you a little bit, kind of go over the profile of the police department, the makeup of the police department. We'll talk a little bit about city growth, what we saw over the past year, the call activities that we saw for 2012, and then we'll talk a little bit about where we feel like we're going for the future, and then answer any questions that you may have. Just want to start off with the vision. We think it's extremely important for us to have a vision that we model within the police department. It's important not only from the chief's level, but the assistant chiefs, our command staff, and our officers are fully aware of what we're trying to accomplish as an agency. And the vision of the College Station Police Department is regarded by our community and our profession as a premier law enforcement agency in the nation. And that's, we're striving for excellence. We want all those different other agencies out there to look at us and say, hey, we like what those guys are doing. Can you tell us how you're doing those things? In addition, we've set out basically just four goals that we're trying to accomplish. Obviously, it goes into great detail once you break those down. But primarily, what we're trying to seek is we're trying to reduce crime and in the process also reduce the fear of crime amongst our community. We want to improve the overall quality of life within the community, and we want to build and maintain effective partnerships. I don't think there's probably any chiefs out there that will tell you that they feel like they have all the resources they need to adequately get the job done. But by building and maintaining those partnerships within the community, the individuals, the neighbors out there, the businesses, they're our eyes and ears, and they're the ones that help us make things happen within the community. And it's important for us to make sure that each day that we're out there trying to build those effective partnerships. A little bit about the makeup of the department. We have 128 authorized sworn personnel within the agency. That's going to be our police officers, the sworn individuals, the ones that wear the uniform, detectives, and those that make up that group. We also have 60 authorized civilian personnel. That's primarily our communications division that makes up the bulk of that. And then we have detention officers that make up a portion of it, as well as our records techs and different things like that. And then we have 14 temp seasonal employees. These are basically our school crossing guards. They help us out about an hour each morning during the school year and about an hour each evening during the school year. Kind of give you an idea of the educational background of the department. And these numbers are probably just a couple of months old, hadn't quite been updated, but we had about 97 employees with different types of educational degrees. Education is very important to us. We strive for excellence. 21 with associate degrees, 69 bachelor degrees, and 7 advanced degrees. And so it is important for us. I think a lot of times you don't understand it, and the ones that we hire coming in don't truly understand how much report writing is done, and they figure that out really quickly, and how important it is to get a good education. Now, we do struggle. Unfortunately, I say from time to time we see people coming in that have degrees that still have a struggle with writing, so we're always constantly trying to figure out how did they make it through. And I know, Ms. Brick, you'd probably be wondering that as well, but it's important for us to look and find those personnel with good education, and it goes a long way in the professionalism of the department. In addition, our personnel received in 2012 over 1,560 training hours. And basically what that is primarily, or 15,560, we're required state-mandated training through TCLOS. We have to keep our sworn officers up to date each year on required training. In addition to that, 7,000 hours of academy training, and basically the basic police officer academy is an 18-week academy. It is a 720-hour course, and we had about 10 people that went through that basic academy last year. The budget for the police department currently is about $16.5 million. And it is primarily based off of salaries and benefits. There are some equipment costs as far as vehicle maintenance and different things that are associated with that. But as with most of the departments here within the city, it's primarily based off of salaries and benefits. We are an accredited agency, both in the law enforcement realm and as well as in our communications division. We're very proud of that. We've had national accreditation within the department for the last several years. 1991 was the first time we were accredited from the law enforcement side. We have received flagship status as it relates to that, which sets you apart. It serves as a model agency for other agencies where they look at your policies and procedures. We're very proud of that. Our communications division this past year was reaccredited for their third time. They received a gold standard, and basically what they did is they changed that flagship status now to the gold standard, and so it still puts you up with the elite, so we're very proud of that as well. We're currently in the process of being reaccredited or getting ready for reaccreditation on the law enforcement side. That'll happen this August, trying to get things prepared. As we've got, we'll have a mock onset coming up probably here in the next couple of months, and then we'll be prepared for the assessors to come in, making sure that we're keeping up with best practices within the agency and making sure that they look at all of our policies and procedures and how we're doing business. This slide's obviously going to be a little bit difficult to see, but I'll talk to you a little bit about the structure of the organization and how we function as an organization. This past year, I think most everybody knows Assistant Chief Johnson retired in April. And so during that time period after he retired, we took some time to look at the organization, how we were structured, to see if it was the best, if we were operating in the most efficient manner. And we kind of split the duties up with the two remaining assistant chiefs, and we ran with that for a couple of months as we evaluated the best way for our organization to be set up. In the end, we found that the workload, if we were going to be able to for that bureau chief, if they're going to be able to have the time to move us forward as an agency, to be the visionary to look and see where we need to be going, that truly we need three bureaus within the organization. And so the workload was to that demand that we would be more reactive if we just had two than we were going to be able to be proactive. And so here recently in January, as you all know, we promoted Assistant Chief Billy Couch, who's behind me here today. Can't say enough about our bureau chiefs. I depend on them very heavily. We spend a lot of time together on a daily basis, sometimes an evenly basis, sometimes a nightly basis, trying to make sure that we're keeping up with the activities of the department. If you see the first column there, Assistant Chief Brandy North, she's over our Operations Support Bureau. That made up of our Criminal Investigation Division. Our Recruiting and Training falls under that, and then also our Special Operations Division is with that as well. On the field operations side, it's primarily our Uniform Patrol Division, and our Crime Analyst falls under that category as well. And then the Administrative Service Bureau is made up of our Communications, our Jail Division, Information Services, which handles all of the records that comes in, Technical Services, Support Services, and our Support Services primarily our Animal Control Officers, as well as he handles all of our fleet maintenance and is responsible for the building as well. And then they handle all of the property and the buying and the purchasing for the department as well. And then our Community Service Lieutenant, which is Lieutenant Craig Anderson. Also, you'll see, if you can tell through the chart, that I have a couple of direct reports. I have a staff assistant, have an administrative lieutenant who's over our professional services and internal affairs that reports to me. I have the policy and accreditation manager who reports to me. Our Joint Terrorism Task Force, we have an individual who is assigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force. He also reports to me, and our Public Information Department reports directly to myself as well. Let's give you a look at the number of calls for service that we've had over the past 5 years. If you look at it holistically over the last 5 years, or actually this is a six-year graph that we have up here, we've had an increase in calls for services about at 38% over the past 6 years. Now, if you look specifically at the trend over the last year, we actually dropped about 3% in calls for service, and I'll break that down a little bit here with the next slide. We look at, when we talk about calls for service, we talk about calls that actually come in from the community, And that is represented in the graph where you see the CFS. That's calls for services that are coming in from the community where they're calling and say they need police assistance somewhere else. The SI that you see, this stands for self-initiated activities. That's what the when the officers have time when they're not on calls or whether they're not taking care of other activities, they have time to be proactively patrolling. And if they make a stop and ends up in arrest or some type of situation like that, that becomes a self-initiated activities. So primarily, if you look at that between 2011 and 2012, there's not a huge difference in the number of calls for service from citizens. It dropped probably 200 or 300 calls, but it very minimal. Where we did have more of a drop was in the self-initiated calls for service, and it dropped about 2,400 over the past year. Now, we look at that every year, try to figure out what's going on, and there's obviously several things that can be going on during that time. One of the things, and we're going to talk about it as we go through the presentation a little bit more, we had several very significant events over the past year. We're going to talk about them a little bit as we move through, but some of those events, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Fidelity incident, but you had a major event that primarily 2 weeks, we had officers from all divisions within the department tied up on that, whether they're working outside perimeters, holding the scene. And so there's not a whole lot of self-initiated activity going on during those time period when they're primarily focused on making sure they're keeping the scene secure. And we were tied up over there for several weeks trying to get that incident cleared up. And so you always have big incidents. We try to look at what is those causes. And so I think that is one thing we'll look at, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we move forward. One of the other things that we look at is our response times to calls each year. I've got it broken down into our priority one type calls and our priority two type calls. Our priority one calls includes our assaults in progress, 911 type calls, robberies in progress, alarms, sexual assaults, burglary of habitations in progress. Basically anything that is in progress is a priority one call for us. And what we try to do and what we're striving for, our goal is to be able to respond to those types of calls within 6 minutes. We're a little bit over that for this past year. We ran about 7 minutes and 7 seconds, and that has to do a lot sometimes with the geographical area to cover the amount of traffic that is involved, and the size of the beat sometimes has a play. It's a factor in that as well. Priority two calls also have that listed here. We actually responded to priority two calls within 8 minutes and 42 seconds, which is fairly good. That's stuff like civil matters, possessions of marijuana, welfare concerns, DWI-type calls, prowler calls, and SPOs. And then we have priority three calls. I don't have that here on the slide, but that's primarily your cold cases. Somebody comes home, I've had a burglary report. It's been, I don't know when it happened. It may have happened several days ago, and those are those types of calls. So if you look at our statistics for the last year, major crimes overall were down 19% within the city, which we're very pleased with. And then if we break down our major crimes, and when I talk about major crimes, I'm pretty much primarily talking about those part one crimes for the uniform crime reporting statistics. That includes your murder, sexual assault, robbery, aggravated assault, theft, vehicle theft, and burglary. And so that's primarily what we're talking about. Specifically, our property crimes were down 21%, which is very good for us from where we were the previous year. We saw a pretty good spike in property crimes in 2011, and so we spent it was a main focus for us as we moved into 2012. We knew that we needed to try to make sure that we're putting people in the right spots, and so we spent a lot of time in our CompStat meetings trying to ensure that we were putting people in the right spots and trying to make sure that we worked on those burglary type calls and different things like that. As you see on the violent crimes, which is going to, again, our violent crimes includes our murder, sexual assault, robberies, and aggravated assault, we were up about 10%. And I'll break that down here a little bit more and talk a little bit about that. This is kind of a breakdown. And so when we see that 10% increase in our violent crimes, I don't want that to be too misleading because the numbers are fairly small. And so we'll look at that a little bit. If you talk about murder, we had one murder in 2011. We had four in 2012. Now, three of those homicides occurred in one incident, which was the Fidelity shooting. So you kind of have to look at that a little bit. Sexual assaults was up about 9%. But when you look at the numbers from 2012, we were up 3 more sexual assaults than we were in 2011. And robberies were up about 20%. When you compare it to where we were last year, we had 36 robberies in 2012 compared to 30 in 2011. Aggravated assaults remained basically the same. We were 61 both years. As you see, the dramatic decreases that we had that we're very pleased with is our burglary of habitations. We were down 26% burglary of habitations from the year prior. And then also on our burglary of vehicles was significantly down. We were down 44% on burglary of vehicles from where we were the previous year. One of the trends that has caused us some concern over the past year that we're seeing an increase in numbers of is it's classified as an aggravated robbery. At the end of the day, what we're talking about, and we commonly refer to them as the drug ripoffs, we have seen more and more of those over the past year. And unfortunately, in each of those types of cases, there's usually weapons involved, and primarily what we're seeing is guns involved, and there's narcotics involved. Well, a lot of times in the past, I think what we saw, this has been many times in the past a crime that's probably gone unreported. Some of the differences that we saw over this past year is that I think we've probably always had from time to time people not wanting to pay for their narcotics or whatever. So if you got somebody trying to sell narcotics, somebody goes in and rips them off, steals their drugs. Well, we had a group over this past year that not only would they go in and steal your narcotics, which was one thing, but then any type of electronic equipment, if you had flat screen TVs, they would take that. They would take all of your, you know, your nice electronics. Well, people had a tendency to more want to report that than they did just the narcotics being stolen. And so as you talk to them pretty quickly, the stories just didn't always match up, and you can kind of figure out how it goes from there, and then you actually get into, actually, this is a drug ripoff. Some of the things that probably have a factor in that, as well as actually the cost of marijuana. The high-grade marijuana is primarily what we're seeing here in the College Station area. About 90% of our cases involve the high-grade marijuana. If you're talking about a pound of that, you're talking about anywhere from $3,500 to $6,000 for a pound of high-grade marijuana. There's not a lot of people that want to spend that much money on that, or some of the drug dealers don't want to, and so that's how we're getting into some of this activity that we saw. Again, we've mentioned we've had several instances in which we've had a kidnapping over the past year involving this type of activity, in which we were able to, with the assistance of Navasota PD, get the suspect stopped and taken into custody. We've had a homicide that occurred in the 1200 block of, or 1400 block of Hollick here just this past November. A little bit different in this case, where we had a suspect that went in to steal the drug dealer's marijuana, and at the end he got shot by the drug dealer and ended up dying. So anyway, the cases are very serious for us. There's a lot of potential for people to get hurt, and what we don't want to see is other people, innocent bystanders, getting shot as well. And so we're spending a lot of time analyzing these. We put some resources on this, and we're going to look and see what we can do to about curbing this activity as we continue to move forward. This will kind of give you an idea of the charges that were filed and the arrests made, and kind of gives you an idea of what we deal with primarily here in the College Station area. If you look at our DWIs and DUIs, which is in the first column there, kind of gives you a 3-year comparison. We were down this past year in those numbers a little bit. We're down 571 DWI arrests to 493 this past year. On the flip side of that, our alcohol-related accidents were up 25%, which causes us concern. Obviously, we understand that if we can get the individual off the street prior to them having an accident, is what we're trying to accomplish. In some of those cases, I think the accident occurred before we were able to get them off the street, and so we're constantly looking at that and trying to address those issues. Unfortunately, you know, as we've seen over the years, that is just going to be a constant, continuing thing that we're going to have to try to address each year. We continue to have that. We have strong support groups that are helping us with those endeavors. We've got different task force type weekends that we're moving towards, and we've also moved and are moving as an agency into basically a mandatory blood draw if they refuse to give a specimen. And we primarily, with the assistance of all the local judges in town, they've been put on a rotation list. And so we can, instead of one judge being called every night for a search warrant for blood, we've rotated that through. The system is working really well, and so we can do that in a much more expedient manner and not tying up one judge night after night after night. So I know our own municipal judge has been pleased with rotation as well. So in addition, as you can see through that, we see theft is always big for us. The narcotics use is big with the possession of marijuana arrest. And then we have a lot of people just out here driving without a license. And really, to be quite honest, that goes back to the alcohol-related arrests. If you're involved in alcohol-related arrests, they remove your license. Or if you don't have an insurance, your license is suspended. And so it all ultimately ties back together. And so that's a lot of things that we see on a daily basis. This next slide kind of gives you a breakdown of our motor vehicle crashes that we saw over the past year. We did see a 6% increase in overall total accidents for 2012. As we continue to grow as a city, there's more and more traffic involved, and there's a lot of things that we're trying to do to make the streets as safely as possible. And so we're going to continue to work on that, not only from our department, but we work with traffic management. We work with Troy Rother and his group from an engineering standpoint, and we're going to continue to look for ways to try to make this a safer city. Just briefly go through a couple of significant events that we had over the past year, and we'll start off on the first day of 2012, and it's always bad when you start off the first day with a homicide, but we did this past year, and that was in the 3100 block of Kane Road. In that particular incident, we responded to the scene of a 21-year-old female that had been shot. And a search of the area, we were able to find the suspect. The suspect was taken into custody a short time later and is currently waiting for trial in that particular case. Moving forward to February, we had a double fatality crash at Holloman and Texas Avenue. I think many of you may remember we had two of our blend students were involved in that and were killed in that accident. It was an extensive investigation into that accident. At the end of the day, there was a skirmish that had happened up at in a parking lot up off of University Drive, where one of the individuals in the vehicle in which the passengers were killed was injured from the fight itself. And so you had the driver who was trying to find a hospital to take this individual to, and in the process of trying to find that hospital, ran a red light there at the intersection, was struck by another vehicle, and they ultimately lost their lives in that accident. Another significant event that we had that probably most will remember in April of 2012, we had the Walmart shooting incident. Basically started off as a shoplifting type incident in which there was a struggle between the loss prevention officer and the suspect. The suspect pulled out a weapon, and there was a struggle over the weapon. Ultimately, he was able to remove the weapon from the guy, and then another weapon was produced in this incident, and the suspect who was involved in the shoplifting was ultimately shot. What we learned through this particular incident, anytime you have any type of shooting incident at a large department type store, such as a Walmart or wherever it may be, you have multiple people calling 911. We had multiple calls coming in. You have multiple people seeing different things. You got multiple people hearing different things. And so it was extremely taxing on our communications division. And when that call goes out, as the thoughts were, as additional calls are coming in, everybody sees things a little bit different. So is there one shooter? Is there more than one shooter or additional shooters? And so anytime you have that type of information coming out, and then over the radio, you talk about active shooting. We had responses from all over the county coming. We had responses from a state level coming. We had a lot of people show up at the incident, and we have to be prepared to handle all those different agencies coming. We have to be able to prepare to handle, one, making sure that there are no other suspects, and then how do you clear a department store that's full of people, and how do you determine who in there may be shooting or who is trying to leave the store as a patron. And so it was an extremely challenging event for us. It lasted a couple hours, and at the end of the day, I'm pleased that our officers handled it as well as they did. There's obviously always some lessons that are learned from each incident, and we go through that and we do debriefings on that, and we learned a lot from this particular incident and how we want to handle things in the future. And so from that standpoint, I think that was good. This next incident, I think everybody truly understands the magnitude of this. August 13th, 2012, we had the Fidelity shooting, which Constable Brian Bachman lost his life. Brian was a good friend of many within our department, and his loss has been deeply felt, and it continued to be felt. He was really a good friend to a lot of our staff. Worked really well with Brian, and it hit our department very hard. As well as Constable Bachman losing his life, a citizen was killed, Christopher Northcliffe, and then Ms. Barbara Holdsworth was shot. She was critically wounded in the incident. In addition to that, Officer Justin Olkey from our department received a gunshot wound to the leg. I'm pleased to say that Justin is he's back at work. He's not back to full duty yet. He is on light duty, but he is helping us around the office with a lot of activities, and so it's good to see him back up. And he's had a kind of a long road of recovery as well, but he's doing really well. Through this event, I would say just the outpouring of support from other law enforcement agencies. I'm amazed of all the different law enforcement agencies that came to help us and assist us in this incident. I think we're very blessed, and we've talked about this in the past, very blessed to live in a community where each of the local law enforcement agencies work so well together. And it was really a testament during this case, everybody coming together and working very hard. In addition to that, we had federal resources that came in, state resources. And it was truly a team effort to make sure that we got to the point to where we are today. Equally, I think, supportive, though, was the members of the community. I can't tell you how much that the outpouring for the community that we had, the support that they gave for our staff, our officers, everybody that was involved on the scene for multiple days. It was just, it's hard to put into words how much support that we received, and been very, very pleased with that. Obviously, through this incident, there's some lessons that we've learned through it, and some things that we're going to do a little bit different, tweak policies and procedures on how we handle things. But overall, I'm extremely pleased with the response of our staff. I've been extremely pleased with their ability to be able to move forward as an agency. We worked with all the officers involved, worked with their families involved. I'm pleased to say, but everybody except for Justin, who's still recovering, are back to full duty, doing very well. And I think that's a testament to each of them. Out of this particular instance, and we will be bringing this back to the council in the next, I'm not sure if it's actually the next meeting or the one following, but there's a couple of equipment needs that we've identified and that we will be bringing back to you guys for consideration. But what we're going to be looking at, you can see the picture there of the type of ammunition suspect had. I didn't bring in a picture of the weapons that he had, but through this incident, we have made a decision that we need to make sure that all of our officers have rifles and availability of rifles. And so we're going to be working towards that, working with the city manager's office, and we'll be bringing that forward to you. What we're going to be looking at is we need about 67 additional rifles within the organization to make sure that everybody on the sworn side is outfitted. We're also going to be looking at some ballistic type vest for all patrol officers. While currently everybody wears a bulletproof vest, what we're looking for is some additional plate carriers that they can put on when they get into that type of an incident. They can put over their equipment that they currently have on. We will provide them additional protection against rifle-type rounds and different things like that. And so we'll be bringing that forward again. That will be coming forward here in the next next couple of weeks for your consideration. We're still finalizing some of the bids, currently working with the vendors on some of the bids on that. One of the biggest changes that we've had here in the last, recently, here in January, is we redid the beats within the organization. Prior to the reorganization of the beats, we had done that in 2009, and as things have continued to grow within the city, we've seen that all the development along 2018 with the multifamily dwellings, different things like that, the growth that we've seen in the southern part of the city, we knew that we needed to change our call volume. Our call volume in the particular beats that we had changed, and so we've worked on a reorganization of the beats. The city is comprised of 8 beats, as you can see, and each officer is assigned to the beat. We try to keep them in those particular areas at least for a period of a year. We would like to do it as a period of 2 years. We feel like that they understand those beats. They grow to know everybody, or try to know as many people within those beats as they can, get to know them personally, and so that we build that trust, that level of trust between the neighbors and those officers that are working in those particular areas. In addition to the 8 beats, the city is divided up into 3 sectors. We have a sector lieutenant who's responsible for each of those sectors, and they do a fantastic job of making sure that they coordinate efforts when we need additional resources in each of those particular areas as well. Here recently, we've started another unit, and I'm going to talk about them in here in just a minute, a community enhancement unit. We've got 3 officers assigned to each of those sectors as well, and we're already seeing huge dividends with that unit, and I'll talk about it more in detail here in just 1 second. Kind of give you an update. You know, this past fiscal year, we came in and we had a service level adjustment where we asked about additional officers to help with the North Gate unit. And I kind of give you an update of where we're at with that. It's a specialized unit that's going to handle some of our major concerns that we have in Northgate on those peak nights, the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. They will handle those call loads in those particular areas. In addition, when there's not the need or there's not those peak hours during Northgate, they're going to handle our problem areas of the city where we're seeing, if we see a spike in crime in certain areas, we can deploy these officers into those areas to resolve whatever that issue may be. And so we're looking forward to that, as well as during the early evening hours. They will primarily probably be up in the Restaurant Row area, up and down that corridor. There's a lot of tourists that are in and out of that area, and we want to make sure that we have a chance to visit with a lot of people. We have a tendency from time to time have some burglaries and stuff up in those areas, and so we want to make sure that we are protecting those areas as well. The unit is expected to be fully activated in October 2013. We've hired the individuals. They're currently in the police academy. It took some time to do background investigation, but we have them hired. They probably have 2 weeks under their belt in the police academy, so we're looking for them to graduate in here. They'll graduate in about December, and they'll go through a field training program, not in December. They'll be graduating here in June. And then they'll go through a field training program and hope to have them out fully functioning by October. And then again, I'll just bring this back, community enhancement unit. We really felt like we needed the opportunity. We tried to handle a lot of this with our patrol officers, and what we saw was whenever we would have a problem in a particular area, we'd send the patrol officers out. They would handle that problem, but then again, you got calls stacking up, and so they would be able to hit the symptoms a little bit and hit the symptoms, but then they're going on to the next call. So what we're going to try to do and what we've been able to do with this community enhancement unit, we want to be able to send them out. They're not responsible for other calls, and so when they have a problem in particular, they're going to go out and they're going to get down to the root of whatever that issue is, and they're going to get to the problem of it, and they're going to be able to solve that issue at the base level and the root level. I think we're going to see great things from this unit. We've already are receiving many compliments for what they're out there doing, and I'm looking forward to great things again with this unit. Briefly about our future and as we move forward, we're going to continue to monitor the effects of development and growth of the city. related to resource needed. We do feel like probably in the next couple of years, we're going to have to look at the feasibility of a ninth beat within the unit. As you saw, some of those beats are still fairly large, and so we're going to be looking at that. That is, you know, when you talk about another beat, you're talking about 24/7 coverage, and it will be additional resources for that. We are starting on a path of what I consider an enhanced voluntary use. In the past, we've had volunteers come and go, but we really haven't managed it well. And so what we want to do, try to free up somebody, and we've been able to do that with the reorganization that we've done here recently. And primarily what they're going to do is they're going to manage volunteers. We want to build a volunteer program that we can be very proud of. Everybody can see and say, hey, man, look what those guys are doing with volunteers. And we think we can be very successful with that. We see multiple uses. There's a lot of people out here that have some extra time on their hand with great expertise, and we can use them in a number of ways. We just need to manage it well. And so that will be an area that we will be working on this year, and I think you'll see some vast improvement in that over the years as we move forward. Also, we were one of the major projects that we're looking at is upgrading upgrading our computer automated dispatch, we call it CAD, and our records management system. The system we have in place was put in place in 1990 with an upgrade in 2000, and so it's time for us. There's so much more technology and capabilities of the systems now that was not available at that time, and this is going to be a huge step for us. It's a very important process, but it's a very large process as well. It is in the capital plan with our IT department working heavily with Ben and his group on that, and so we'll be talking about that more as we continue to move forward with that project. And then continued growth of the department proportionally. We know that if we're going to be successful, we can't just add sworn personnel. We have to have civilian staff as well to handle that support role. If you continue adding sworn, they're going to generate more activity. They're going to generate more reports, and we got to be able to have somebody to be able to manage that, make sure it gets to where it needs to be. And then lastly, we're going to be looking at some spatial needs for the department. We understand that as we've grown as an agency, we're running out of space. We've got several things within the department that we've got to figure out a way to find additional space for, evidence being one of them. We're overwhelmed with our evidence currently, so we're going to have to look at some spatial needs for that. There's a lot of different areas within the department that we need to find some space, and we're going to be working with our city manager's office on that as we continue to move forward. And with that, I will open it up to any questions that you may have.
Well, thank you, Chief. That's an impressive report, and there's a reason why we get reaccredited every year at the gold standard. So is there anyone? We'll start with Mr. Benham and
excellent.
Work on down.
Thank you, Chief. Really appreciate your time spent preparing the report. On space issues, I was curious, were you ever able to find a place for the large vehicular evidence to be placed?
We are still working on that. We have a couple of, I guess, options right now that we're just trying to work through the details on, but we have not have truly identified that yet, but we have a couple of different places that we're still in negotiations with.
And my second question, thank you for preparing the detective caseload report for me. I appreciate that. I went back and retrieved it from our council chair, and I saw that, and that this wasn't in the presentation, but I saw that our per detective caseload in 2010 was 25. This is the yearly average by month, 25, and then in 2011 was 40, and then 2012 was 45, and so we're almost double our you know, per detective caseload, and obviously that's a concern with clearing cases out and being able to solve crime. What are your plans around that?
Yeah, we have been truly monitoring that and looking at that, and we are making some progress on that. What we have done is we've added a police assistant who's actually taken some of those smaller type cases that it doesn't take a sworn personnel. Some of the cases we can clear out by phone. It's just a couple of phone calls, and you can work and get some additional details. Some of the things that's bogging down our detectives a lot as well, with new technology that's out there, in the past, not everybody had video evidence or something like that. And so a lot of times now, there's video evidence in a lot of cases, and so, but it takes somebody dedicated to be able to sit down and review that, and that takes time to see what, if it's of evidentiary value, if that makes sense. We can do that with some civilian personnel as well, so we're not tying up a detective to constantly be doing those things that we can do with the civilian personnel. Those are just some of the things we're starting on. At the end of the day, we know that we're going to need to add, you know, some additional resource to that. We're going to continue to work with that. We have a vacancy in there right now. As soon as we get, you know, somebody cleared up out of the academy, we'll be able to probably push over in there in the future. And so we are working through that, and we have seen some better results over the last couple of weeks and months.
Do you feel that there are any positions that we should have for, I mean, modern crime fighting as far as detective investigations, like a technical forensic analyst, that we just don't have that kind of position, and we really need that in our department?
You know, there's a couple of things, and when you say technical forensic, you're talking about somebody that...
They can actually, when you subpoena mobile devices, they actually know what they're doing
right.
with the equipment.
And we have some people, and they're doing some dual roles that have been trained in that, and so we actually are working on getting another guy trained up. We have a guy that has moved over to the district attorney's office that was working for us that primarily did all of that for us. And so we do have some people that are kind of dually trained where they actually can investigate cases, but then they can do that as well. And so we're looking at that, and we'll continue to look at that. And as that need continues to grow, that may could turn into in the future as a full-time position, but I don't think we're quite there right now.
All right. Thank you.
Ms. Schultz?
I was just noticing on your graph where you had all the different instances of public intoxication and so on. Do you equate any of the increases in those things as our joining the SEC and the additional visitors we're having? And if so, are we doing any kind of, and I know there's no way to do educational type programs, but something to where you help a visitor understand how things are here as opposed to where they are coming from.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point. I think most of those laws are the same, probably wherever they're coming from. We looked at the SEC as compared to the Big 12 this year and we were trying to think, man, are we going to see this vast difference or we're not? We didn't see a whole lot of difference, to be quite honest with you. I mean, at the end of the day, you got 80-something thousand people that come to town to go to Cal Field. You got 80,000 people that come to Cal Field, whether it's Big 12 or the SEC. So we didn't see a whole lot of changes as it relates to the different types of crowds. And we were all concerned about, LSU's coming to town. LSU came to town. But it was not at the level that everybody expected it would be. I think it went fairly smoothly. And if you look at the numbers, I think they're relatively the same as compared as it was last year. So we didn't see a whole lot of change as it relates to that. So.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Chief, we've been warned our microphones aren't working quite right this evening. So.
Yeah, push them back a little bit. We understand they're on high volume. So.
Okay. Thanks for the report. I really appreciate being able to go over it and having had the opportunity to ride along a couple times. It makes it a little bit closer to home, particularly some of the things. Northgate, can you just expand a little bit on what your vision is for Northgate?
Yeah, what we're trying to do up there, obviously we have a lot of activity up there during those peak hours, and so some of the things that we're looking at, we have, you know, working with our traffic divisions and working, we have a lot of vehicular traffic. We've accomplished some things, I would say, in the 100 block of College Main, and so that is working much better than it has in the past. Some of that traffic flow has moved down now to the Boyette Street, so we're looking at those particular areas and figuring out the best way to manage that. And we'll be working with our traffic management teams on that. Got a lot of pedestrian traffic crossing over in those areas in those peak times. And so Assistant Chief Couch, Lieutenant Perkins now, who works up in that area, they're in constant working with our traffic managers and different things to figure out the best way to manage that. But I think they've got a good eye on it. As far as our you know, what we're trying to accomplish with those Northgate individuals. Primarily in the past, what we've had to do is we've had to pull people from the southern part of our city and put them up there during those peak hours. And what it's, this is going to allow us is not have to do that. So we can keep people in those beats. And you know, I think as the city's grown, the number of calls for service in our southern part of the city has expanded. And so we need to be able to keep people in their beats where they need to be so they can be responsible for handling whatever activities those are. And so that's a big plus for us, is being able to keep those individuals in their beats and still be able to manage the demands that we're going to see in the Northgate area.
Not that they're necessarily related to each other, but you know, you did indicate in your report the increase in public intoxication. I know that's not limited just to those who patronize the Northgate areas.
Right.
You know, also when you think of public intoxication, well, those folks are just a step or two and a turn of a car ignition key or push button, as the newer ones are, from being DWIs.
Right.
Do we need, does council need to support the police department in additional ways, budget, manpower, whatever, to be able to help with regards to maintaining, and pardon my choice of words here, but perhaps a more consistent or a more intensive, you know, DWI type patrol during those intensive times, like you were referring to Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, especially during football season?
Yeah, I think, and I know we keep going back to with additional personnel that we've been able to bring on, and that we're going to be able to have them available as we move into the peak of football season this year. I think having that, you know, in the past, a lot of times we had the luxury of, you call them attack assignments or whatever you want to call them, but we had to kind of get away from that because those individuals were responsible for handling those main activities that were happening in the Northgate as the city grew. With this new personnel, I think that we're going to have the luxury to be able to have some TAC units now that we haven't probably had in the past, who can work DWIs, you know, primarily concentrate on DWIs during those peak times. We're also looking at probably a different model as we did with our traffic unit over the past than we have in the past. In the past, we had, you know, 6 to 7 motorcycle officers primarily working days in the school zones and different things like that. Our vision kind of for the future is to still have a set of that, because those are important to concentrate on those particular areas, but expand that traffic unit where we'll have some probably in cars working in the evening times and managing those types of activities, the working those accidents, working the DWIs and different things like that. So
one last question and then I'll pass it on. You mentioned earlier that you know, the size of the beat, and we've made some adjustments in recent time. But the size of the beat keeps getting bigger and bigger. One of the areas, for example, Castlegate, a few months ago we approved 656 homes, I believe it is, for Castlegate 2. And I just drove through that area just yesterday.
Right.
You know, can you talk a little bit about the process that's involved? I know we've got new schools, and we've talked about the safety of children going to and from elementary schools.
Yeah.
What's necessary to establish a crossing guard as right. we get new streets and new intersections and, you know,
yeah.
a lot of busier stuff going on?
There is, and there's we're going to see an increased demand for that. We work well with our school district, and we try to forecast when those things are going to happen. Some of the things that maybe we haven't done as well in the past that we have a probably I consider a much better working relationship is sitting down with our planning and development group. Bob and them are really good. They include us at the table when plans are being made for additional streets, when additional schools are coming in. And so we're on the front end of that, and we're able to provide some insight on how this will affect traffic and how this is going to affect us, and is there going to be more personnel. We also have been working with the school district as far as, you know, school resource officers for the future, and what does that look like, and getting projections from them as to what are their plans, what are we going to be building, what are they going to be building. And so that's been beneficial as well. And so I think just keeping up and making sure that we're working hand in hand with our planning and development department. We understand what's coming in. We understand with working with them, we know that we're going to see a lot of development in the Northgate. They've made those presentations to you. We're going to see other developments coming in within the city, And as you mentioned, the beats, some of them are still pretty big. The one in the southern end of town, we kind of rearranged that. 80 beat is fairly large, and we understand that. It's primarily based off the call volume, and we're blessed right now that the call volume is not as extensive as it could be. We do know that as the future and continued growth, that those calls are going to increase, and that's kind of when we start looking at that. When is the right time to look at a ninth beat and different things like that? So
thanks again.
Mr. Fields, and then Ms. Brick.
Hey, Chief.
Hello, sir.
I'm just going to flat out ask you, Carl got the edge of my question. Are we really paying our guys enough?
Well,
because when I look at the priorities of a city, I can't see a priority higher than public safety.
Right.
And when you look at all of the things we spend money on, and you look at competitive cities with us, similar size, we're not in the very top echelon of pay among similar sized cities in the state of Texas. And so you can or can't answer that as you want to, but
no, I think I can touch on that a little bit. I will tell you this, over the last couple of years, through the direction of the city manager's office and working with our finance department, we have come a long ways in that area, and it's been very beneficial for us as an organization. I think that we are trying to make sure, obviously, we want to be competitive, and we have really come a long ways in that, what I consider in the last 3 years, and we've making some steps. As you know, we've put together a pay plan for the officers, a step pay plan that it does not leave a whole lot of questions. Everybody understands it. They understand the philosophy of it, and so that has been very beneficial for us as an organization. And I think I'm pleased to say we have commitment from the city manager's office to continue to have us be where we need to be, and so we have been extremely pleased with that. We have, obviously, we're looking at the whole department, and I know these guys are looking at the whole city as well, and where does that pay structure. And I know behind the scenes, and I know through other meetings that we're having with our human resource department, different things, that is on the mindset of the whole city, where we need to be as a city.
Well, I want to ask you then, because you mentioned the pay plan. We went through a two-year pay plan, pay increase, and I think it may have been separated by a year where we didn't, but it was a two-step pay plan. Is that right, that we did in the last few years?
Well, it was phased in two steps to get us where we need to be. Now, what that does for us, allows us there's annual increases based off of, if everybody's meeting those expectations or their performance is high. So on annually, that's incorporated into that step plan.
For individual officers that move up, but I mean, I'm talking about salaries across the board for each of those levels, not just the fact that an individual officer will move up with seniority. So given the fact that we had a two-year plan to increase pay across the board, is it perhaps time that with this year or maybe next year's budget cycle, we start looking at where the next step would be so that we can continue to attract quality officers and meet the needs of our city's safety going forward with regards to the number of officers and the quality of officers that we get?
Well, I think anybody would say, probably any department director would come up here and say that we, as an agency, and everybody wants to be competitive, and I think that we have that commitment from the city manager's office through a pay scale to make sure that we're going to be competitive. And so I think that's something that's going to be looked at on an annual basis every year. So
let me ask you a little less serious question, just out of curiosity. There's a lot of discussion. I was reading a story earlier that the chief of the Houston Police Department is now advocating for gun control. And I'm just wondering how you feel and how the department feels that responsible gun ownership in our community helps to deter crime.
Mr. Fields, I, this is a performance report, and I think that's more of a philosophical discussion, and we're already over time, so ask you to, if you have a specific question on the performance report, to ask that.
Okay. Well, if that's irrelevant, I apologize.
I don't think it's irrelevant, but I think it's not germane right now to this performance report.
Sure.
Any other questions, Mr. Fields?
No, that's all.
Okay. Ms. Brooke?
I just have some observations. And one is this, I think, has been very helpful, and I hope the citizens that have heard it have focused on the idea that growth has cost. Sometimes we focus so much on taxes, sale taxes, property taxes, that we forget the cost associated with growth, whether it's Northgate or new developments or whatever. And I think this is a good educational thing for all of us, what's required to support that growth.
Yes,
and a quality force. And just to say that as long as I've lived in College Station, I've always felt that, you know, the interaction with the public and the police have been, we've had good interaction, and it's probably as good as it's ever been or better, I think, now. And I just wanted to especially thank the police department for the quality policemen who are assigned to the public schools, because there's where they have a real opportunity to affect the next generation.
Right.
And to establish a good working relationship. And I know it's not the most glamorous assignment, but it's a very important one, and I appreciate the feedback I get from everyone. And also for the night out, I think that's a very useful endeavor for us and for the citizens too.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and we do understand the importance of our school resource officers. It is extremely vital that we build those relationships and we start at a young age, and we understand the importance of that and what that can, the benefits that can pay as we move into the future. And so I appreciate you saying that.
Thank you. Mr. Nichols?
I don't really have a lot of questions, but I just want to compliment the police department on what I think is a first-class organization. I particularly compliment you on talking about the volunteer development approach, and I think, as I understand, your Citizens Police Academy is fully subscribed this year, and you're offering it twice a year, and that's great. I think that's another way to build that community relationship that Council Member Brick was talking about. But again, just thank you for your report, and thank you for everything you do.
Thank you, sir.